Space Cowboy Books presents Simultaneous Times, a science and speculative fiction podcast. Short stories to stir the imagination by contemporary authors.
Echo of Creation by Jean-Paul Garnier, with music by Fog Machine. Read by Patricia Thompson, Heather Morgan, Lawrence Lane, and Jean-Paul Garnier. Chelsea opened the new data packet from her parents. As usual, it contained a list of suggestions for upcoming decisions that would need to be made. She was sick of her parents dictating her life, but as of yet, they had never been wrong. Chelsea longed to meet her mother and father. They had been promising for years that they would come to visit. She stopped believing them a long time ago. Regardless of their empty promises, the data packets rolled in at scheduled one-month intervals. Ever since she was a child, she had received these messages. Early in life, the orphanage had enforced her usage of the information. Now that she was an adult, there was no need for the caretakers to intervene. All of the children she had grown up with received similar data packets, and all of them were forbidden from mentioning them to anyone outside of the orphanage. The secrets of the future needed to be carefully guarded. The first item on the list made Chelsea's mouth drop.
They can't be serious this time. How would they know? They've never even met him. They haven't even met me.
Her heart stung with bitterness, yet her parents had never been wrong. And now they were demanding she leave James, to call off her engagement plans. Usually, the packets contained suggestions about education, finance, and potential disasters. Getting involved in her personal life was too much. It was an encroachment of her privacy. The fact that they could see the outcome of her actions from their vantage point in time didn't change anything. If marriage to James was a mistake, then it was her mistake, and hers alone.
What do I care about history if it hasn't even happened yet?
Picking up the phone, she dialed the only person in the world that she could talk to about the implications of the message.
Hi, sweetheart. I was just gonna call you.
Chelsea interrupted James with a flood of tears.
My parents have sent me the worst message. They're saying that I need to leave you.
I know, Chelsea. I received a similar data pack. Let's meet to talk about this in person.
2120.
Mary, you shouldn't be so hard on Chelsea. She's young, and you can't micromanage her life to the last detail,
said Timothy, knowing well how his words would be received.
You haven't seen the archives, Tim. While you're busy at work, I've been ensuring that our daughter will have a wonderful life. Historical records show that a marriage to James would be disastrous. Not only that, but they won't have kids.
Sounds like your first marriage, honey.
Timothy regretted his words before they were finished leaving his lips.
That's exactly what I'm trying to say. She doesn't have to make the same mistakes that I've made. She should be safe from such problems. That was the whole point of our investment. She doesn't have to live with the unknown that we do out here at the edge of time, with an uncertain future.
I understand your position, Mary. But for God's sakes, please don't bring that edge of time crap into our issues with Chelsea. You of all people should know better than that. Or have you forgotten that the work I do allows for us to contact her in the first place?
The conversation played out as it did every time they had a rift about parenting. Mary viewed Chelsea as her project, a way to give someone the life that she had always wanted for herself. More important to Timothy was the work he was doing to ensure that possibility. While sending messages to the past had become standard fare for those that could afford it, physical travel to the past was so taxing on the body that only the very young could make the trip. His aim was to remedy this issue. He knew that they were providing a wonderful life for their daughter, but more than anything, he longed to know her, not just through the archives, the way that Mary did, but to speak face to face. He wanted to see her smile, to hear her voice, and to hold her in his arms. 2030. Chelsea fell into James's arms and returned to sobbing.
How could they suggest we break up? Did your parents tell you why? My data package was vague. It sounded to me like leaving you would benefit my mother's idea of who I should be and really has nothing to do with our relationship. We're the perfect fit. How could they do this to us?
I feel the same way, darling. But how often have our data packs been wrong? Of course my inclination is to ignore the suggestion, but have they ever sent bad suggestions? Every piece of advice that both of our parents has given us has been right. The same goes for all of us from the orphanage. How could they be wrong? They already know what happens in our future.
You sound as if you've already made up your mind. You're leaving me?
Said Chelsea in a fresh wave of tears.
I didn't say that, Chelsea. Think about it. Would we be making the wrong decision by going through with our engagement? Both of us know that they're not allowed to tell us what would happen if we didn't make the change. Regulations only permit suggestions to come through from the future, otherwise things would get mucked up. Timelines would cross, or some other form of temporal disaster. So say the warnings.
2120.
My project is up for funding again.
Is that a good thing, honey? Are you getting closer to your vision of chronotransit for adults?
I'd like to say that I'm closer to making it a reality. But a lot of that relies on the project's availability to funds. I've heard that the Matter Dispersal Department has something new up its sleeve. It's going to be up to the Brasswich Project takes precedence. Of course, I think that my cosmic ray phase cancellation algorithm needs to come first. The comb filtering problem, you know? But I can't tell them that because they'll think I'm biased. Ultimately, it's not my decision.
Replied Timothy, knowing the details would be missed.
Sounds complicated, honey. I hope that your boss sees the importance of your work. It would be so lovely to finally meet Chelsea. We've been promising her for years. Please make it work, Tim.
I'm trying, darling. Nothing about the process is easy or quick, for that matter. I'll be having lunch with Mr. Yamuda later today. Hopefully we'll know by tonight. Either way, it could still be years before chronotransit is possible for adults. Don't go getting Chelsea's hopes up unnecessarily. And please, go easy on her about the marriage. He might not have even popped the question yet, for all we know.
Tim, don't treat me like I'm ruining it for her. The marriage is a mistake and will spoil itself before too long.
She's going to have to do some growing up on her own one of these days. We can't baby her for the rest of her life,
said Timothy, hiding his frustration. Mary smirked and replied in her condescending tone.
You go to work, honey, and let me worry about the parenting. You just make it so that we can visit her in person. She'll have an easier time understanding things when I can tell her myself.
Her voice grew stern as she added,
Good luck with your meeting. Chelsea and I are counting on you.
The last remark was almost too much for Timothy to bear. This was not his idea of fatherhood.
Why did I ever let Mary convince me to send our daughter to the past?
But he had caved and let his wife have her way. All of her friends were doing it too. Most mothers thought that chronotransit was the best way to ensure a good life for their children. When time travel to the past had become possible, people stopped being able to deal with the uncertainties of an unwritten future. Nothing was certain for those at the edge of time, as the present had come to be known. Now the pressure was on, both at home and at work. 2030.
I don't care what they say. James, these are our lives and we can live them however we please. How can we be so sure of our parents' advice? They are out there on the edge of time. Their perception of our future is always changing. Can we really trust people that we never even met? And we're not allowed to talk about the things they tell us as if people would believe us anyway. How do you think someone would react if you told them your parents lived in the future and sent you to the past so they could look out for you? People would think you were a lunatic. And besides, this is no financial decision or what college to attend. They're talking about our love. I can't just turn it off because of some item on a list.
James's words stuck in his throat. He felt the same way as his fiancée, but neither of their parents had ever offered bad advice. And now both of them were saying that the marriage was a horrible idea. It meant that, whatever the reasons, the archives said that their partnership would not go well.
Maybe we should think this over for a while. Perhaps we could postpone the wedding and do something that will change their minds. Our future isn't set in stone. We could change something and make it have a different outcome, one they'll accept.
Chelsea could tell from the tone of James's voice that his heart was starting to cave to their parents' will. At the same time, her heart broke. Not just for the realization that James would most likely leave her, but also because for the first time in her life, she knew that it was time to cut herself off from her parents and their damn archives. No more taking advice from strangers. No more being sheltered from mistakes. She wanted the present to be the present. They were sucking the life and mystery out of her life, and she wanted to live. Really live.
You go ahead and think about it, James. I'm going to live my own life from now on. I don't care what my parents say, and I won't listen to their advice anymore. I don't even want to read their stupid data packs. It's not parenting. Most people can have a two-way conversation with their folks. Our situation, no matter how they see it, is neglectful and selfish. By our time standards, child abuse.
Chelsea got up to leave, hesitated for a second, then walked away.
James is too much of a mama's boy for me anyway.
2120.
Oh great, you're home. I'm a little confused. I've been looking through the archives and I'm not sure how to interpret what I'm finding. It looks like Chelsea must have called off the wedding, thank God. But it also looks like she didn't even take any of the other advice on the list we sent. There's no record of her being married at all. Do you think something went wrong with the data pack?
Those archives change on a daily basis. I wouldn't be too worried about it, honey.
It was a strain for Timothy to sound calm, and it made him even more nervous to think that his voice could crack. He felt like choking.
But Tim, her college diploma has also disappeared from the archive. What could she have done? At first I was happy because of the marriage being called off, but after looking further, it's starting to look as though she changed everything. I worked so hard to help her. Why would she ignore our advice? She knows we're right!
Timothy's meeting had been disastrous. He wished that he could shrivel to bed and avoid Mary for the rest of the night. Chelsea seemed like the least of his problems at the moment. Not only had his project's grant been passed up, but the current funding was also going to be slashed due to upgrades in the dispersal department. This double hurdle to his project not only meant that they would probably never live to see the day that visiting Chelsea would be possible, but almost as horrifying, they would surely cut back his salary by shifting him to part-time. Consulting was one of his worst nightmares.
I am an engineer, for God's sake.
His thoughts drifted back to the present, and he watched Mary's mouth move aimlessly. Finally, he brought himself to speak.
Mary, my salary is going to be cut. We can't afford to send Chelsea data packages anymore, at least for a while, maybe once every 6 months or so.
2030. Chelsea didn't look back as she walked away.
There, Mom gets her wish. I'm done with James. I want a man that will stick up for his woman. One I can raise a normal family with. And both of us will be present for the children.
Her resentment faded into a new excitement. For the first time in her life, she was on her own. Really on her own. The only advice she needed to take from now on wouldn't be coming from the future and its blasted archives, but from her heart. She knew that she would miss James, but if he didn't have the conviction to disobey his parents for her sake, then what kind of husband would he make? James continued to try and contact her for a few weeks. She neglected all of his calls. A data packet arrived for her 3 weeks ahead of schedule. Chelsea started to open the packet, then decided that she didn't care what it contained. While she was curious, she wasn't about to be told what to do, especially by her parents. Even knowing that she would abandon the advice, it felt wrong to know about the future. She wasn't living on the edge of time. For her, the future, for the first time, stretched out before her in a spectrum of infinite possibilities.
Just because my parents are at the edge of time doesn't mean they know better. For them, the past is always changing and is just some log in the archive.
Not knowing what would happen next made her feel more alive than she ever had before. 2120.
I've sent one last data pack. I know we can't afford it, but I had to tell Chelsea a few last things before we can't contact her again. I also told her that we are sorry that she's on her own. I said goodbye for the both of us.
Hopefully it's only temporary, honey. We can still keep an eye on her via the archives. And just because there has been a major setback doesn't mean that I won't keep trying to make chronotransit possible for adults in our lifetime. My work is still valid. There may be kinks to figure out. Who knows what will happen?
That's exactly the problem. Who knows what will happen? Damn living on the edge of time! I did everything I could to provide Chelsea with certainty in her life. And look how she says thanks! My daughter ignores my advice! And my husband can't even afford to send her another data pack! Can't handle the uncertainty. I wish I could have been sent back to the past. I still wish I could go and meet our daughter.
What I was going to say is that there are no guarantees at the company. My project could be put back into action for all we know. There's still hope, Mary. Not just for us to contact her, but for us to visit the past as well. I will never stop working on that problem, job or no job. I want to visit Chelsea too. I always have.
Mary retreated into herself. The news was too much for her to bear. First, Chelsea's history changing, then being cut off from her with no way to fix things.
I'll never get to see her in person. How will I ensure she has a good life? If I can't send her advice, then her life is as uncertain as mine out here on the edge of time. Why couldn't Timothy secure his job? With an unpredictable future, she might as well be with us. Oh God, what am I gonna do?
2030.
I'm gonna travel the world, get into trouble, find an interesting man that's not from the orphanage, a real man with his own future. If it's possible, I'll try to avoid being recorded in the archives. That'll show her. What made her think she could dictate my life?
Chelsea closed her eyes and pointed her finger at a map. It found its resting place on New Mexico.
As good a place to start as any.
Her heart filled with the thrill of adventure. She had made the first decision of her new life, unaided and random. From now on, life would be hers. The feeling of not knowing if it was the right decision was exhilarating.
Why didn't I ever try this before?
She felt as though her whole life was waiting for her. A long stretch of possibilities that she could navigate however she pleased.
I wish that James could share this with me. He doesn't know what he's missing. He wants to know everything that's going to happen. It takes all of the fun out of life.
2120.
Timothy, I want to visit Chelsea's grave. Let's go today. I want to at least see where our baby ended up.
Honey, promised a long time ago that we wouldn't do that to ourselves. You know, the grave is going to be almost a century old. We've never been, and it could be in disarray.
That's one of the many reasons that we need to go. If we can't send her data packs, and we'll probably never meet her in person, the least we could do is tidy her final resting place and pay our respects.
Mary had already done the research. Through her many hours of poring over the archives for the last few decades, she had found that Mary's resting place had changed several times, but always because of a shift that they had recommended in their monthly messages. This time, her resting place really was final. Her remains were in Santa Fe, New Mexico. They would have to fly the half an hour across the country. Mary felt that they owed it to Chelsea.
Okay, Mary. Let's pay a visit. I've actually always wanted to, but it's always felt strange because she is alive to us, even though she has been gone from her time since before we were born. I'll charter a flight if you want to go ahead and make the other arrangements.
Mary and Tim stood over their daughter's grave. Although rotting with age and overgrown with weeds, it was still a beautiful sight, from the days when they still used real headstones and not indiscreet flat plaques. Timothy cleared the overgrowth so that they could read the stone. Both parents burst into tears when they read the earnest and sadly honest inscription. Chelsea Sullivan, 2101 to 2052.
I wish we could have met in person. I love you anyways. May your futures be bright and uncertain.
Birth of Fire by Frank Slater. Recorded live at Space Cowboy Books with music by Red Blue Black Silver and Fog Machine, read by Jean-Paul Garnier.
Birth of Fire. A great blackness abounds. Aside from the density, the blackness is all that exists. A seething foam of potential. The state is timeless, cold, thoughtless. Peaceful temporarily. Yet the dust needs to settle. Once agitated, begins to move, coalescing towards itself. A pocket here, a pocket there. Quickly, then slowly, creating time as it goes. Billion years later, he offers her a ride home from work. He's been waiting for the opportunity and stayed late just for this reason. Great accreting disks form in the blackness. The building blocks of mass begin to find each other. Forces separate. The darkness grows without reference point or observer. She accepts. He grins. Why go straight home? Small bubbles of warmth fall inward, becoming heat. The swirling mass finds shape here and there. As here and there become places in the darkness. The density steps outward, dissipating, rarefying in some places, condensing in others. She gets in the car. He suggests a drink. She accepts. Motion in the blackness. Spinning. All things spin. Moving in the nothingness. Hydrogen forms. Clumps. Finds its kin. Another man waits on the porch. Awaits her return. He too drinks. Looking at the night sky, contemplating its blackness and its fire. The darkness engulfs him. The city lights have swallowed the stars. They are disconnected from the cosmos. Matter joins matter in a timeless dance that makes time in its wake. Hydrogen heats up. A small glow at first, growing hotter in planked units. As the first things find each other, the fabric of creation erupts from the void. The forces work upon each other. She and the suitor arrive at the bar. Drinks are poured. The ceiling blocks the few stars that are left. He buys her a drink. No, she offers to pay, preferring to feel in control of her indulgences. The waiting man cries out to the stars. He feels that infinite blackness around him. He knows that light is nothing without the information that observers provide. He follows the light back to the beginning, yearning for creation. She laughs at the suitor's jokes. He flatters her. She sees them in the mirror behind the bar and searches his face for that familiar look of longing. She finds it there. Drinks deeply, wondering if it is for her alone. On the porch, the stars come alive. He is near the beginning of time. Sees the ignition. The heavens burn with the first light, the first real information. Witnessing this event terrifies him. From darkness to light, the transition burns his eyes. Tears do little to extinguish the searing light. The spinning clock of the stars tells him that it has become late. She has not arrived or announced the tardiness. Planets rise and fall, always heading west towards the infinite sea of space. Last call. They order again. The suitor insists on paying this time, wanting for a good impression and further contact. In his mind, he has been laboring for this date, desires another and more. Buzzed and jovial, they drink until closing time. The lights in the bar go out. The lights of the universe flicker. They begin to shine. On the porch waiting, he sees back through billions of years, light flowing forever, measuring vast distances, shifting in the expansion. Generations of stars dying and giving birth. They get in the car and move swiftly, drunkenly through the city streets. Relative positions shift. The suitor puts his hand on her thigh. She makes no move to arrest his palm. Nervous sweat soaks into tights. In the side view mirror, she sees her smile reflected back to her. The city lights have stolen the stars. On the porch, he waits in frozen limbo. Cars pass in the night like comets. He hopes that each brings her smiling face. The hours tick away. what's left of the stars spin. In the passenger seat, she looks up from the mirror to see his worried face gazing out from the porch steps. She looks to her lap and sees the suitor's hand still attached and wanting. To be needed in two places at once. She smiles, suggests a spot down the street, away from the waiting man and their home. Fires rage as the universe fills with light. The first stars burn bright and briefly, dying, exploding, finding each other again, forming greater balls of fire, heavier. Elements join in greater complexity. The suitor parks the vehicle, opens the sunroof. They gaze at where the stars once were, finding no fire in the heavens they kiss. His hand never leaves her thigh. On the porch, stars explode into the waiting man's vision. The skies are ablaze with fire. Heavy elements form in the chaos of explosions. Beautiful jewels of color grow from the flames. Gold is forged in the heat, waiting to become a ring for her. Her hand finds that of the suitor and brings it to her breast. He touches the elements that make her up, also once forged in the stars. They delight in the blackness of deceit. Proximity sweetening the deception. Relative position rupturing time. Delicate hope breaking without the waiting man's awareness. He sits watching the birth of light flood the infant universe and sees her as its grand reason. From one cheap thrill to the next, she misses this great luminous flood. The eyes of her suitor are glowing brighter in her mind. But in time, she will forget his name. The birth of the cosmos blinds the waiting man. He is not big enough to accept its stature. His mind is too small to capture its meaning. He has placed the meaning in her hands, the same that now stroke the suitor's leg, teasing to go further. The suitor swells, thanking the missing stars above him. Waves of light penetrate the waiting man. His tears are no filter for the infinite brightness. The beginning washes over him, suggesting the ending. The cold, dark end when all matter has separated forever. In these hours, billions of years pass. The waiting grows tiresome. The light wanes, then becomes bright again. Millions of stellar deaths before him. In the car, seats are leaned back. They lie next to each other, hands intertwined. He speaks of her beauty in the darkness, not knowing the color of her eyes. The darkness grows. The suitor's face is unimportant. He is a symbol for her. one that may be filled by any multitude. On the porch waiting, he cries for creation, for the lights that must dim in time, their death a show that no one will witness. In the darkness, the suitor kisses her deeply, reads from a script designed to impress budding females. She laughs at the words as though they were written for her. The lights of creation separate. Time flows faster. The expansion grows faster. On the porch, he moves his gaze from the past to the future. He sees that time is one place. The stars move. Space moves. The distances become unfathomably vast. Too much so for human contemplation. The fear caused by the great ignition, the wonderful spread of light, is worse now. The cosmos will swallow the light in time. It becomes a flicker again as the distance between photons expands. The suitor wants more, he says so. She feels at him, making sure he is swollen to bursting. Tells him it's time she left. She exits the vehicle into the night. On the porch, the waiting man sees the stars extinguish and the cosmos return to blackness. The state is timeless, cold, thoughtless, and dying.
Please consider voting Simultaneous Times for Best Audio Drama Production in this year's Audioverse Awards. In this episode of Simultaneous Times, you heard Echo of Creation by Jean-Paul Garnier with music by Fog Machine and Birth of Fire by Frank Slater with music by Red, Blue, Black, Silver and Fog Machine. Theme music by Dane Luscombe. Out now, Simultaneous Times, Volume 1, Paperback Science Fiction Anthology. Available at spacecowboybooks.com and lulu.com. Be sure to visit us at our store in Joshua Tree, California, or at spacecowboybooks.com. And connect with us on Instagram or Twitter. We'd love to know what you think of the program. Now a word from other fellow Joshua Tree podcasters.
We live in a very weird place. A dry and mountainous land of poisonous creatures and desert monsters. Missing tourists and strange lights in the sky. Join us every Friday at 10 p.m. for a late night voyage across the mysterious Mojave Wilderness on KCDZ 107.7.
Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Are you looking for a new way to think and transform? Tune into Myth Matters, a biweekly podcast of storytelling and conversation about mythology and why it's important to life today. Find a more creative way to live. Learn more at mythicmojo.com and keep the mystery in your life alive.
Have you ever wondered why people live in the desert? I'm Dawn Davis, and I host Desert Lady Diaries podcast. It's a weekly conversation with women who found their home in the Mojave Desert. Each week, I talk to women who were either born and raised in the desert or felt called to come here and what the desert means to them. You can learn more about the podcast and listen at desertladydiaries.com.